2017 promises to be a year full of change, especially in light of the changing of the guard in Washington, D.C. What kind of changes could the world of banking be in store for? We invited returning guest Mary Beth Gard from Bankers Online to talk about what changes she thinks might be on the horizon. I'm your host, Honey Shelton, and this is Training Matters.
Training Matters is brought to you by the Training Institute, dedicated to setting the standard for individuals responsible for training effectiveness in banks and credit unions across the country.
The speculation is big about possible changes in the laws that surround the banking industry. Will Dodd-Frank go away? What about the CFPB? There's plenty of buzz. But let's keep our feet on the ground and tap into the expertise of Mary Beth Gard from Bankers Online. Let's hear what she anticipates will happen. Mary Beth, welcome. Our listeners are eager to hear what you have to say, and so am I. Take it away.
Well, thanks, honey. It's good to be here. You know, when I think about people saying, maybe the CFPB is going to go away, maybe they're going to repeal Dodd-Frank, I think back to a valuable lesson that I learned when I was a kid. There was one weekend when I had a big project. It was due on Monday. I didn't want to work on it. I didn't like the project. I had plenty of time, but I didn't do a thing because the weatherman had said that there was going to be a significant weather event. And I became convinced that Monday was going to be a snow day. And if Monday was going to be a snow day, I didn't need to worry about the Monday deadline. Well, the weatherman was wrong. Not only was there not a significant weather event that passed north of us, we got a few flakes, but no snow day. I had to stumble into class with nothing to show for my project, and I had to do extra credit work for at least a month to dig out of the hole. So my point is, when it comes to your compliance projects and obligations in 2017 and beyond, don't assume you're going to get a snow day. So what should you expect? Well, there are two developments that loom large right now. One is there was a court case in the fall of 2016 that involved the CFPB, and it's going to have ramifications, and then, of course, the 2016 election. So let's talk about the court case first. You'll hear it referred to as the PHH case. And PHH is the name of a company that was involved in the mortgage lending business. And they were the subject of a CFPB enforcement action, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And the underlying case involved kickbacks under the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act. The CFPB said that PHH had illegally referred consumers to mortgage insurers in exchange for kickbacks, which would be a violation of Section 8 of RESPA. Well, PHH didn't roll over. They said, nope, we do not believe that we violated the act or the rule. We're going to court. So it went to court before an administrative law judge within the CFPB, and the administrative law judge imposed a $6.4 million fine for violations, and that was connected to loans closed on or after July 21, 2008. I don't know about you, but $6.4 million seems like an awfully big sum of money to me. That's a big spanking. But the CFPB didn't think it was quite big enough. So the director, Richard Cordray, on top of that $6.4 million, said he wanted to order PHH to disgorge all the insurance premiums it received on or after July 21 of 2008, which would amount to an additional penalty of $103 million. Well, PHH was not going to take that line down. So it started looking at the situation and saying, who is this guy? He's like the czar of banking or something. Are his powers unlimited? And they looked at the Dodd-Frank Act, and what they saw was something very unusual. And that is, unlike the directors of most agencies, like Treasury, which is part of the executive branch, the director serves at the pleasure of the president. The president can remove them at any time for any reason. Not so with the director of the CFPB. The president, under the Dodd-Frank Act, was not given the power to remove the director except for cause. So unless the CFPB director engaged in misconduct significant enough to warrant removal for cause, the CFPB director could be there as long as he liked. So PHH decided that they would appeal from Cordray's order that amounted to 110 almost altogether, with his tacked on 103 million and the original 6.4. So they were appealing from that, and they attacked the constitutionality of the CFPB directorship and the way that it was constructed under statute. So it went up on appeal to a 3-judge panel on the United States Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. And in October of 2016, those 3 appellate court judges unanimously ruled that the way the CFPB director's term was structured was unconstitutional because it did not have the checks and balances that are a hallmark of our system. But they didn't rule that the CFPB itself is in any way unconstitutional. Instead, they simply said, okay, the way the directorship is set up, that's not going to work. So we are expressly ruling that the president has the authority to remove the director, and the president has the authority to supervise and direct the director. So what that means is the agency itself isn't unconstitutional, and the agency can't be removed without congressional action. Congress created the CFPB. Congress would have to abolish the CFPB. And as a practical matter, would they do so? And to answer that question, honey, I think you have to look at what the CFPB has been doing. And bankers have to ask themselves, what has the CFPB done that you disagree with? To what extent has it simply done what Congress mandated that it do? If you look at its enforcement orders, do you disagree with them? When, for example, when Wells Fargo had a faulty incentivization program in place that was not properly designed or monitored and resulted in thousands of accounts being set up for credit cards that the customers didn't authorize, thousands of people being signed up for debit cards or online banking that they knew nothing about, and the CFPB came out with an enforcement order against the bank and a fine against the bank. Was it unreasonable for the CFPB to do so? In the 5 years that the agency has existed, it's built up an impressive track record of exposing abusive behavior, behavior that was directed at consumers, that harmed consumers, and it has levied fines because when you're dealing with the entities, that's the only real way to get their attention is through their their pocketbook. So my prediction, bold as it may be, is the CFPB is not going to be abolished by Congress, because that would mean that all of these people are saying, nope, I want consumers to be harmed again without anyone having the overall jurisdiction to police and patrol against it and expose wrongdoing. I just don't think it's going to happen. How about you?
Well, you, of course, are the expert, and I will say that, as you know, the Wells Fargo debacle, I really did a serious dive in that, and I do applaud what the CFPB did in that case and brought to light a practice that all of us in the industry were shocked, appalled, and disgusted by. So I certainly see where you're coming from. I'll have to say it's a little bit of a jolt to my to my reality, since I have had concern about the power broker situation that the director of the agency has. And so do you think it's likely that the president will take a look at that appointment, or I guess that's what it is, isn't it? He was appointed, and who could dethrone him is really in question.
Well,
so really, you're kind
of
shocking
court,
me.
Yeah, because of this court case, the president has the power to remove the director. So what I expect to see in the near term is what I saw in the past when I was with state government as general counsel of the banking department, when there was a new governor. Mm-hmm. We knew that if your position was not a merit system protected position, then it didn't matter how good of a job you were doing, how hard you worked. When there was a new administration, if the new governor had a buddy that had always wanted to be general counsel for the banking department, you could find yourself out on the street and being replaced with somebody who had no experience whatsoever. But the way that you would try to mitigate against that was by doing the best job you could possibly do, so that when the new administration looked, what they would see is, this appears to be working. Mm-hmm. This person appears to be doing a good job. They appear to be carrying out all the policies that they should. So what I expect to see in the near term is the CFPB going after the worst of the worst to compile more high-profile successes in terms of enforcement orders that are indisputable in their rightness, where right-minded people could look at them and say, well, yeah, that entity deserved to be pounded. That was clearly bad behavior, illegal behavior. They should not be allowed to get by with that kind of conduct in America. I think they will do that to garner a wellspring of public support for their mission and the way that they're carrying it out. I think they may back off of some of their more controversial positions and some of the things that could lead to their enemies being emboldened and having more ammunition to use against them. I don't anticipate that they will take immediate action on overdraft programs, for example. You know, that is something the regulators have liked to pick on, but it's very controversial. So I don't think that that will be one of their hot button, let's do it right now items to curtail overdraft protection programs. I don't expect them to go in and do things like broaden the Truth in Savings Act or the Electronic Fund Transfer Act or something like that. And I think with our new president, one of the things that we could see is as a result of the fact that he approaches everything from a business perspective, I believe that there will be an analysis of the cost and the benefit of the different regulatory requirements. If the bank is being asked to do certain things, such as comply with the new CDD rule, which will require banks beginning in 2018 to find out information on the beneficial ownership and control person on commercial customers, I think that the new president and the new administration will look at things like that from a perspective of how much is this going to cost the industry? What is it going to add to the burden that they're already suffering? And is there a less harmful alternative that will get the job done? Because make no mistake about it, the CDD requirements are not going to go away. And the reason is that a great deal of the financial crime from money laundering on down occurs hidden behind shell corporations. And so the Financial Action Task Force, which is an international body that works to combat money laundering, has made one of its priorities obtaining more transparency with entities so that it is less possible for them to hide behind this smokescreen of corporate ownership or LLC ownership or partnership or whatever form of entity it might be. And most countries around the world already have laws that require when an entity is formed that the parties who will have an ownership stake be divulged, and then that has to be done on a continuing basis. That has not been the case in the United States because here we form entities at the state level. And so in many states, we have less transparency than jurisdictions like the Cayman Islands and Panama. Someone can form an entity without there being a public record of who the ownership is vested in and who will control. Now, FinCEN had to do this CDD rule because it is an attempt to get that beneficial ownership information out on the table. But the system that they have put into place to take effect 2018 requires financial institutions to inquire of their commercial customers who has a 25% or more stake and get the information on those people and verify the identity, and then who has control and get the verification of identity on that. It's not foolproof. Liars will lie. And if somebody's trying to conceal the true beneficial ownership, there is nothing to stop them from having Mr. A, B, and C own the corporation on the day it's formed, on the day that the bank account is obtained, and then they flip the ownership to completely different people a day or a week later, and so nothing's been accomplished. But without at least the CDD rule, the United States risks being named a non-cooperating country on the FATF list, and then that means that the banks and companies in other countries around the globe are more hesitant to do business with us. Why? Because it makes us a high-risk jurisdiction, mm-hmm. and individuals and entities that live here have to be subjected to a greater degree of monitoring when they are doing business in a foreign country as a result. And with the global economy that we have, that's a very bad thing when our countries that want to expand and do business in China and India and places around the world are going to have more hurdles that they have to jump over in order to be able to successfully do that business. So back to our pro-business president. One initiative that FinCEN has undertaken is they have drafted some legislation to be introduced into Congress. Right now, there hasn't been a single congressman or senator that has been willing to sign on as an author of the bill. What would the bill do? The bill would require entities to disclose beneficial ownership to the federal government, making it unnecessary for financial institutions to play a role in that process. They would not have to be the middleman trying to discern who the beneficial ownership rests in. Instead, the entities would file that information and update it periodically with the federal government, who really needs to have that information anyways. I believe that that is a piece of legislation that could gain traction in a Trump administration if the administration understands that it is going to reduce the burden on financial institution, which means a reduction in compliance costs, which in turn translates to a reduction in the cost of banking for commercial entities. So I think we could see something there. And then I think there's some inequities in the law. I got a call from a banker this morning, and the banker said, yeah, we've got a customer who has a checking account, and he's got a debit card. He told us that he gave the debit card to his granddaughter and gave her the PIN, and he allows her to use it on the account. But now there have been all kinds of unauthorized transactions, and we pulled up the video surveillance footage, and it's not the granddaughter, it's the grandson. And so the granddaughter is saying, I didn't do those transactions. The granddad is saying, I didn't do them. And the granddad wants the money back in his account. Do we have to do that? Yep, because Reg E just says, was it authorized or was it not? Did he give the grandson the card? No. Did he give him the authority to make transactions on his account? No. Then it's an open and shut case. Yeah, but the granddad knew that the grandson was on drugs, and he gave the card to his granddaughter, and she didn't safeguard it, and the PIN was written on the back. Doesn't matter. Unlike in the paper checks world, where we have the Uniform Commercial Code that allocates the risk of loss to the party in the best position to prevent the loss, Reg E instead bends over backwards to help the consumer and allows the consumer to abdicate responsibility. They don't have to be responsible. So I think in instances like that, we might be able to get support for changes in the law where there are inequities. And for those of you listening who have been hit with a lot of debit card fraud, you know that it is rampant these days, and that in the majority of the cases, it's the financial institution that has to take the loss when the financial institution is not in the best position to protect against it. The only thing you can do is say, we're going to be choosier about who we give the debit cards to. So you've got this great push for convenience in payment systems, but the banks are taking the brunt of the losses from fraud. So I think with a pro-business president, we as bankers can sit back and take a look at where are there inequities? Where has the law gone too far? Where is the law purporting to protect consumers, but we know for a fact that the protection is meaningless because it's just more paper that's being given to the customer that the customer's not reading. And those are the things that we can expect to affect change on. The areas where the pendulum went too far in one direction or where the protective measure is simply ineffective.
Interesting perspective, and hopefully we can get some relief. When you hear those kind of stories, and I know you hear them more often than I do, you think, there's no way this is reasonable.
Right.
So that's encouraging. Mary Beth, to kind of close this out here, I'm going to ask you, a banker calls you and says, how can I keep a compliance officer well informed? What would you tell them? I get asked that question on the training side. I'm curious how you would respond to keeping compliance officers well informed.
I would recommend that if they haven't already, they subscribe to our free daily email compliance briefings from Bankers Online, because even if you stockpile them and read them once a week to see what's going on, or you click over to the top stories section on Bankers Online, you can keep a running review of what has changed, what's being proposed to change. And then the second recommendation is that you visit the Bankers Threads, the forums that we have on Bankers Online, and you can sort those by active topics, and there are forums for different things. So if you're only an ops person or only a lending person or you're an auditor or whatever, you can gravitate to the area that is meaningful for you, and then you can sort them and look at the active topics in the last 24 hours or the last 7 days, and just keep abreast of what people are talking about, what new issues are coming to the front. And then we have a subscription service. It's a premium service called bankcompliance.com. And it not only keeps you informed about what's going on by sharing with you the questions and answers others have asked, and by giving you a curated digest of the most noteworthy threads that are undergoing discussion on Bankers Online, but it also gives you a lifeline. You can reach out and send us an email with any question you have, and we pledge that we'll send a direct answer back to you from one of our expert gurus, typically within a 24-hour time period at the latest. And I can tell you many are answered within a couple of hours. And if the question is very complex, we usually will pull in multiple gurus to analyze it from different perspectives, so you're getting a consensus view when you get your question answered. And it's very cost effective for the entire institution. The cost is under $2,500 a year.
Well, that is awesome. What a great solution, both on the suggestion you made that they just go in and subscribe to your free updates, which I do that and can't say enough good things about it. And then this other service sounds priced right and a real solution for the community bank. Well, Mary Beth, we're off to a new year here. We love that you dialed in today so we could get caught up on what your thoughts are about 2017. We hope to have you back as a guest again. Maybe we'll make this an annual event, sort of like the Rose Bowl Parade or something.
Sounds like fun. And for those of you who are sad that I don't anticipate a big repeal of all the new compliance requirements from Dodd-Frank, remember, change is hard. Change is expensive. You've already assimilated all of the new procedures and requirements. It's under your belt. You can hold your head high and move into 2017 with great confidence.
Good point. Well, thanks again, Mary Beth, and I'll look forward to the next time we connect.
Okay, thanks, honey.
Bye.
You've been listening to Training Matters with Honey Shelton.